What makes a life worth living? This question haunts us all, particularly in moments of transition and uncertainty. In A Life of Meaning, renowned Jungian analyst James Hollis distills over 40 years of clinical wisdom into an intimate exploration of life's most profound questions. Originally presented as recordings at Sounds True Studios in 2019, this work has become required reading in psychology programs worldwide and counts among Oprah Winfrey's personal recommendations for navigating life's complexities. Drawing from his unique background as both humanities professor and depth psychologist, Hollis guides us through what Carl Jung called a short pause between two mysteries, our brief, luminous opportunity to make sense of existence. With celebrity endorsements from figures like Emma Watson and Russell Brand, who cite Hollis's work as transformative in their personal journeys, this book arrives at a cultural moment when many feel adrift in a world of diminishing certainties. Our lives unfold according to stories, not the ones we consciously choose, but those invisibly woven into our psyches during our earliest years. These narratives become the operating system of our personality, running silently in the background while determining our choices, reactions, and relationships. Consider how many of us repeat the same relationship patterns despite swearing never again after each painful ending. These repetitions aren't coincidental, they're manifestations of our formative stories. Two primal existential threats shape these stories: overwhelmment and abandonment. When faced with overwhelmment by powerful others, we typically develop three coping patterns: avoidance, through procrastination, suppression, or numbing; seeking power, through control or self-improvement; or compliance, giving others what they want. Similarly, abandonment, the gap between our infinite needs and others' finite capacity, creates wounds to our self-esteem that manifests as self-sabotage, controlling behaviors, or excessive neediness that paradoxically pushes others away. I once worked with a client who consistently chose emotionally unavailable partners. Through analysis, she discovered her pattern stemmed from her father's frequent business trips during childhood. She had internalized a story that love meant yearning for someone just out of reach. This narrative wasn't conscious. It operated automatically, making her unconsciously attracted to people who would replicate her familiar pain. Our dreams offer windows into these hidden narratives. Though we average 6 dreams nightly, many don't remember them. Yet nature doesn't waste energy. Dreams process daily stimuli while offering commentary on our lives. They reveal the discrepancy between our conscious choices and our soul's deeper needs. When we ignore these messages, our psyche creates symptoms, anxiety, depression, or physical ailments that force attention to neglected aspects of ourselves. The path forward requires recognizing that what happened out there was rarely about us, but about others' limitations. The child within us may have concluded, "I'm unworthy," when a parent was emotionally absent, but the adult can understand that parents' limitations weren't a reflection of our value. This separation between what happened to us and who we are creates space for authentic choices rather than automated responses to ancient wounds. Have you ever felt that everything you believed about yourself and the world suddenly seemed insufficient? This experience, what Yeats called the center cannot hold, marks crucial transition points in our journey. During my years as an analyst, I've observed this pattern repeatedly in clients between 30 and 65. Their worldviews, identities, and scripts become exhausted, with something dying and nothing yet replacing it. One 40-year-old client dreamed her supportive relative told her, "It's time to die." Not literally, but symbolically marking the death of her outdated self-understanding. This represents the difficult in-between state, where our provisional stories no longer serve us, requiring the courage to cross the chasm between who we were and what seeks expression through us. The midlife transition involves shedding our false self, not false from hypocrisy, but because it's adaptive rather than authentic. Like a crustacean that must shed its shell or die, we become vulnerable during this process. My own midlife dream featured a castle under siege by arrows directed by a rich figure, symbolizing my protective but constrictive identity being challenged by neglected aspects of my psyche. The ancients distinguished between fate, moira, the circumstances we're thrown into without choice, and destiny, proiosmos, what is summoned from within us. Our common destiny is in service to the self, the transcendent part that critiques our worldly adaptations. While our ego tries to make passage easier, it sometimes violates our larger purpose and calling. Consider a British graduate student's dream. Invited to dance in a magical theater, symbolizing authentic living, he's interrupted by his demanding mother calling him away. This symbolized how his depression and inability to sustain relationships stemmed from childhood patterns where his job was serving his mother's narcissistic needs. His projections of his mother complex onto potential partners caused him to sabotage relationships whenever intimacy threatened. The fundamental conflict in our world exists between those terrified of change and those who can embrace it. Jung wrote that the spirit of evil is negation of the life force by fear. Only boldness can deliver us from fear. When we risk exploring the greater adventure of our authentic lives, something within us provides support, an inner compass that reveals itself precisely when we need it most. Picture yourself investigating strange rustling sounds in your basement. As you descend the stairs, your imagination conjures various possibilities, some benign, others threatening. This metaphor captures our relationship with the shadow, those aspects of ourselves we'd rather not acknowledge. The shadow isn't simply evil, but anything within ourselves that contradicts our professed values when brought to consciousness. Our biggest shadow issue isn't that we're evil, but that we live small, adaptive lives, walking in shoes too small for us because life's intimidating powers seem overwhelming. Our recurrent denial of the summons to a larger life constitutes our greatest shadow challenge. We all have shadows because we are carriers of the human project, local iterations of human nature containing all its contradictions. The shadow forms from our defenses against anxiety, particularly around change, ambiguity, and ambivalence, while the ego craves security and control. Interestingly, there exists a positive shadow containing our best capacities, spontaneity, enthusiasm, creativity, and passion, often buried under adaptations and collective expectations. Dostoevsky noted, our chief freedom is the capacity to stick our tongue out at the world, asserting our separate individuality against collective demands. Shadow manifests in four primary ways: remaining unconscious, where we don't know what motives drive our actions; projection, attributing our disowned qualities to others; identification, becoming consumed by our shadow; and confrontation, facing our shadow when consequences force us to. Jung emphasized that our task isn't goodness, but wholeness. We do not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making our darkness visible. After writing about shadow, I conducted 40 radio interviews where hosts frequently asked about scandalous public figures, hoping I'd label them as aberrations. Instead, I explained how an astronaut who drove cross-country to attack a romantic rival was experiencing panic from her psychological mansion's frightened child room. The Russian playwright Chekhov noted our tendency to identify crazy neighbors to avoid confronting our own shadow. More wisely, Roman playwright Terence declared, "Nothing human is alien to me." What annoys you most about your partner often reveals your own disowned shadow qualities. Jung observed that our strongest irritations with others typically reflect what we wish to disown in ourselves. Consider where you repeatedly undermine your interests or avoid risking what you intuit to be your larger self. These self-sabotaging behaviors typically serve our primal stories and anxieties. Shadow work is daunting, difficult, and invariably humbling, yet the alternative is far worse. Jung's haunting observation that what we deny inwardly tends to come to us externally as fate should give us pause. This self-examination is the greatest gift we can offer our children, partners, and society. Sin originally meant missing the mark, hamartia, in archery, acknowledging our inherent human fallibility rather than moral failure. The seven deadly sins reveal shadow aspects of human nature that persist across cultures and eras, offering profound psychological insights into our struggles. Consider gluttony. Humans perpetually hunger, but for what? Augustine wrote, "Our heart is restless until it finds its rest in thee," suggesting our hunger is for divine connection. Yet our culture repeatedly learns and forgets that whatever we desire, once obtained, is never enough. During Jung's visit to Taos Pueblo, a tribal leader observed that Europeans were like grasshoppers, devouring and moving on, unable to appreciate the sustaining beauty around them. One severely obese client who grew up abandoned on the streets explained that food was the only constant in his life, making him unable to pass fast food restaurants without indulging. Addictions are reflexive anxiety treatment plans that temporarily lower internal discord. The key question becomes, can I feel what I'm already feeling without the treatment plan that hooks me to other consequences? The ancients considered Eros a god, both the oldest deity, present at creation's beginning, and the youngest, renewing itself in every moment. Desire drives all existence, while its absence signifies depression or death. Our fundamental romantic agenda seeks to die in the other, healing our primal disconnection through merging. The French called orgasm la petite mort, the little death, a brief revisiting of cosmic absorption before returning to isolation. Anger, anxiety, angst, and angina all derive from the Indo-Germanic root ang, meaning to constrict. When our natural being is constricted, we feel anxiety as our well-being is threatened, followed by anger to defend against the aggressor. Being told not to be angry allies us against our nature, driving emotions underground as passive-aggressive behavior. Fritz Zorn, German for rage, wrote his book Mars as he was dying of cancer, believing his disease resulted from repressing his natural feelings to conform to upper-class Swiss values. Pride, hubris, means arrogating to ourselves powers we don't properly deserve, what modern psychology calls inflation. This self-delusion makes us forget the limits of our knowledge, believing we know enough when we never do. Greek tragedy demonstrates how this spiritual arrogance leads to choices with consequences that bring downfall. Too great a sense of sinfulness becomes an oppressive burden, which is why cultures evolve confession and renewal rituals. As Tillich defined grace, we must accept the fact that we are accepted despite the fact of being unacceptable. Our task isn't goodness, which would only prove one-sided, but wholeness, a fuller expression of our human possibilities. Though housed in a fragile frame, the human psyche exists outside time. This explains how you can suddenly dream of a childhood classmate or revisit distant memories with startling clarity. Everything that's ever happened remains present, recorded, and often storied within us. Diane Wachostey's poem, The Photos, captures this haunting quality, how a simple photograph of her father triggered uncomfortable memories during a strained visit with her mother and sister. Fleeing the scene, she catches her mother's face in her own reflection while driving, realizing she remains owned by the history she desperately tries to escape. Our ancestors understood psychological possession as soul loss. Ancient healing traditions recognized that noxious spirits could steal pieces of one's soul. Shamans would enter trance states to identify offended spirits and restore soul fragments to the suffering individual. What remains unconscious yet present exerts powerful influence over our lives. The past may be forgotten, but never truly gone. Beyond personal history, we inhabit cultural complexes that shape our behavior. In Krakow's Jewish ghetto, empty metal chairs commemorate those absent, creating a palpable presence of historical trauma. Cultural complexes manifest as inherited gender roles, social expectations, and behavioral patterns that most of our ancestors believed came directly from God or nature. Complexes manifest physically in our bodies as stomach flutters, trembling extremities, throat constriction, or chest tightness. They inject excessive energy into situations, causing disproportionate reactions we later question. Why did I get so upset? Why did I compromise my integrity? Consider Jeffrey's case. As a child, he was enlisted as his absent father's substitute to care for his troubled mother. This complex led him to marry an alcoholic woman and later attempt to rescue his adult daughter. His profound dream revealed this pattern. His mother's corpse transforms into his deceased wife, who rises, declaring, "I rule here," before giving him an acid, bitter kiss. The psyche's warning about his compulsive rescuing behavior rooted in ancestral assignment. Relational ghosts from our early programming inevitably appear in subsequent relationships, especially intimate ones. Those who experienced boundary invasion develop avoidance patterns. Compliance patterns lead to sacrificing legitimate needs and suppressing desires. We wonder, why am I here again? Failing to recognize ourselves as the common denominator in all our relationships. Beyond personal hauntings, our culture suffers collective hauntings, the loss of gods, faded institutional authority, and the absence of myths that once connected people to transcendent meaning. We're haunted by historical crimes against other humans, indigenous peoples, and nature itself. Of all hauntings, the most devastating is our unlived life, the possibilities we carry within that remain unexpressed. We find ourselves caught between worlds during personal crises when our reliable maps fail us. Throughout history, cultures experience similar in-between times. Matthew Arnold wrote about wandering between two worlds, one dead, the other powerless to be born. Capturing our current cultural moment where traditional verities have lost their authority while powerful, directionless forces are at work in the world. Jung's insight that the gods have become diseases transformed my understanding of spiritual confusion. Gods are personified energies coursing through the cosmos that inhabit certain concepts before moving elsewhere. Our mistake is attaching to the secondary image, like Zeus, rather than the primary energy that animated it. While we've abandoned traditional gods, we remain possessed by these same energies, now manifesting as neuroses. Earlier civilizations believed in a cosmic plan where even tragedy was part of divine will. Today, we expect scientific explanations and solutions for everything. Yuval Noah Harari observed that humans agree to give up meaning in exchange for power. We've traded cosmic significance for technological control. The concept of the singularity represents our approaching tipping point where artificial intelligence may soon outthink us, introducing profound ambiguity about our place in the world. For some, having an internal compass is an intolerable threat, causing retreat into dogmatism or addiction. For others, it invites a life of dignity and meaning. I realize that our home is our journey. There's no regression to past comfort or future Valhalla, only the journey itself. Like Odysseus seeking Ithaca, the search itself provides richness. Something within us knows us better than we know ourselves, containing ancestral wisdom even when we've lost contact with it. Finding our compass requires daily discipline, stepping back from distractions to check in with our souls. When journaling, we should ask deeper questions. What touched me today? What generated significant energy? What did that activate from my history? Active imagination, unlike meditation or guided imagery, involves activating the image from our dreams or psyche. When confronted with disturbing dream elements, instead of fleeing them, we must re-enter that psychic space and engage. Who are you? Why are you here? I once experienced a transformative journey with a witch-like figure who initially seemed threatening, but eventually transformed into a beautiful presence offering rose petals at Graceland. This process humbles us while providing profound purpose and dignity to our journey. Through active imagination, we access the wisdom of the ancients that remains available within each of us. As we enter our later years, we must periodically review our lives, asking what this journey has truly been about. The author offers three stark truths about aging. Everything hurts, energy becomes unreliable, and loved ones increasingly disappear. Rather than seeking comfort in platitudes, he advocates a three-part daily mantra. Shut up, recognize your problems are minimal compared to global suffering. Suit up, prepare and work hard at what matters. And show up, do your best each day despite feeling flawed. The psyche's growth agenda continues regardless of bodily aging, sorting through our personal histories to identify meaningful threads in our narratives. Rilke's poetry captures this process, using metonymy, specific images like a children's ball game, to access larger, inexplicable experiences. These specific images provide apertures into the mystery of mortality and immortality meeting as one simultaneous reality, helping us make sense of our life journeys. Our earliest memories serve as metonymies, specific images that open doorways to larger experiences. When old patterns resurface, we shouldn't berate ourselves. Life isn't linear, but spiral. As Jung noted, we don't solve our history, but can outgrow its dominating influence once aware. Bringing these stories into conscious awareness is essential. We can't choose freely without knowing all the players on our inner field. As we age, we must address our remaining tasks of personal liberation before time runs out. A client with terminal cancer realized her life had been governed by fear. In her final months, she took up skydiving and martial arts, later sharing it was the best time of her life. She wasn't absent fear, but refused to be governed by it, a crucial distinction. This radical shift allowed her to experience authentic living despite facing death, demonstrating it's never too late to grow beyond our fears. The central task of life's second half is recovering personal authority. With our egos flooded by messages, warnings, and distractions, we must sort through to find what resonates with our deepest truth. Resonance isn't something we create, but an autonomous response when we're in right relationship with our soul. Without living these resonant truths, we enact what Jung called the provisional life, merely following received scripts. Our fundamental human problem is that we are mortal and acutely aware of this fact. This awareness creates an existential tension that shapes our lives. Throughout history, cultures with strong beliefs in afterlife or cyclical rebirth found mortality less threatening. But for modern Western civilization, with diminished religious assurance, mortality represents the ultimate affront to ego sovereignty. The modern world has developed five primary strategies to cope with mortality: frenzied activity, keeping busy so death doesn't trouble the soul, numbing through drugs and alcohol, distraction, Pascal's divertissement, obsession with aging and life extension, and the pagan celebration of Carpe Diem. Rather than being morbid, reflecting on mortality can be a daily summons to wisdom. While we drown in information, true wisdom comes from asking what truly matters and what is worth our commitment. Ancient wisdom traditions like the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh and the biblical book of Ecclesiastes both recognize the essential absurdity of the human condition, that we live briefly while fully aware of our impending death. Despite being written centuries apart, they reached identical conclusions about how to live meaningfully. Address the present task life brings you with your full energy, love those whom the gods have placed at your side, and respect the larger mystery. Death is not a problem for nature or divinity, only for the ego and its attitudes. While we need ego consciousness for daily survival, problems arise when the ego, sensing its vulnerability, arrogates excessive powers to itself. The most pathological defense is denial, illustrated by Jeremy Bentham's bizarre request to have his embalmed body present at university dinners. Eastern philosophical traditions have approached mortality differently than Western ones. Buddhism's central work involves relinquishing the ego's fantasy of sovereignty. The Buddha's noble truths recognize that life involves suffering and mortality, that ego attitudes, not nature, cause suffering, and that the solution lies in the ego's capacity to relinquish its agenda. Whatever we project about mortality is merely a construct of our limited ego. At death, the ego is either annihilated or transformed beyond imagination. Life involves many deaths beyond physical death, attachments and losses we must navigate. As Yeats wrote, "Man is in love, and loves what vanishes." And Jung added that only those ready to die with life remain vitally alive. The psyche speaks to us through instinct, just as a dog naturally knows when to walk after surgery or when to withdraw before death. We possess this same inner guidance, but have become disconnected from it through rules and schedules. Our inner compass reveals itself when we risk exploring the greater adventure of our authentic lives. By attending to our soul's unfinished business, we become less problematic to society while opening greater possibilities for others. Our life journey becomes fascinating when we recognize that the next mystery awaits into night's dream.